Welcome to New Human Living Radio Show, bringing you powerful interviews to awaken the power in you. Learn more at newhumanliving.com. And now your host, Les Jensen.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm so glad you chose to join us. I think we're in for a delightful conversation. The topic tonight is your journey to love, and our guest is Simran Singh. You know, the journey to love, I mean, do you get the compass and map out? How do you go about finding this this love? And where is the journey to take you? Well, that's going to be what we're going to talk about tonight. And without further ado, I want to just jump into the show. So join me in welcoming Simran Singh to the show. Welcome to the show.
Well, it is a pleasure to be with you, Les, always, and I want to congratulate you on your work, your radio show, your wonderful book, Citizen King. So it's always a pleasure to speak with someone that's really out there creating and living his talk as well. Thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure having you on the show. You've been on the show several times. I think it's always nice to share that time together, especially once you have some rapport, because you can dig a little deeper then, and you know, we understand who each other are and can have a dialogue that I think wouldn't be possible if this was our first show. So I'm looking forward to it.
As am I, and we can go wherever you'd like to go.
Okay, all righty, well, your journey to love. What? How did that show up as in your life that you would write a book about it? And I mean, how does that come around to be something you focus on?
My walk has been one that has been extremely devotional. I knew from an early age that I was here to really create that union with my soul and be in communion with the divine. And so every step of my life creation, every challenge that has arisen, the direction that I've gone is to do my inner work and to really be in that place of communion. And when this book was to be written, it originally started out a writing that was completely different. And then life brought me an experience that actually took me to a place where it was such a void. It was one of those situations where you end up with complete heartbreak and in a place of complete helplessness where you don't know or can't know what to do. And it's as if, you know, in those moments, the only place to turn is inside. And I said out loud, okay, if this is what you've brought me, then obviously this is the place that I need to go. And what it ended up being was an actual integrative life experience as if walking into the shamanic underworld and really doing my work. And I committed to really going to those places that so often we don't want to go. You know, we don't want to dive into our grief or into our sadness or into the very dark depths and crevices of who we are as human beings. But I knew that with what had shown up in my life, that this was an invitation to go somewhere so deeply into the dark that you don't even see dark anymore. It's just emptiness. And something told me going into that was going to take me through a wormhole and allow me to come out into an experience of light far beyond anything I'd ever experienced before. And that's what this book is. It is truly that walk of lover and beloved. And what I discovered is that lover and beloved is actually the shadow and light of ourselves. And so I wanted to really share that and help people understand that this part of ourselves or these experiences that keep trying to get us to turn into look at something, that void really will lead us to the most beautiful place that then opens us to our divinity, our creativity, and a far greater expanse of light within us than we ever knew was possible.
Well, very nice. Just load up the table with topic. That was beautiful. Well, it is. Well, you know, I want to go back to what you were very first saying, where you said you broke down, where you had this collapse of self. So often, I mean, I'm sure many of our listeners can have this idea that, well, you know, love hurts. I mean, when you break up from a relationship or go through a divorce or have a loss of life or something that takes this semblance of love away, how is it that our lives can be so such an illusion or such a construct that they can literally break apart in the journey? I mean, how do you take a look at our typical persona, you know, in these human beings, and what is it about who we think we are that can even have such a collapse of self happen?
Well, I think you started off by saying the two words, love hurts. You know, we're taught that right from the beginning. We're taught that very early on. Even our fairy tales teach us that love is going to be this tumultuous journey, and there's going to be a villain, and you're going to have to overcome something, and there will be this happily ever after, but it's going to happen after you've gone through these valleys and over these mountains and had to fight for it. And so we experience these things partially because we're programmed to believe that we have to go through that and that there is this hero's journey that we're here to live out. And we love a good drama. I mean, look, we go to the movies all the time just to see something that is going to take us in the highs and the lows and the romance and adventure and suspense and sometimes even horror. You know, it's just kind of where we go as humans. But it's because we've been conditioned in that way. What I really think obstacles and challenge, regardless of what it looks like, is here to do is to let go of the identities that we have come to believe we are. Because it is the identity that is cracking apart when we go through those experiences of grief and loss and heartbreak. We all of a sudden have no idea who we are in those moments because things start to fall away. And then that leaves us floundering in this place that is the void where we can't go back and we can't go forward because we don't even know what is forward. But what tends to happen is most people either rush past it and get very busy, or they go into whatever addiction they have, or they run into the arms of something else, and they never actually just sit in the space of what it is and let it consume them. Because we're taught in this society, you're supposed to get over it, you know, or just move on, or, you know, this is just part of life, and you have to pick up the pieces, and you just have to keep on going. And I thought, you know, what if that's not the case? What if we are actually supposed to fully immerse in it? And that's what I meant by saying going into the shamanic journey of the underworld, but yet in this life. Because we have this belief that if we start crying, we may never stop. Or that if we go deeply into whatever depression comes about, we may never rise back out of it. Or if we really look at the anger and the grief that we hold, that it may overtake us and turn us into monsters. And yet that's the very thing we need to discover, that we are the angel and we are the monster, that we are the devil and we are the god, and that we are all of these pieces, all of these archetypes. And what one by one we're here to do is take off those garments. These are all just garments that we're wearing. And when you finally strip that all away, what's left? And you discover there's nothing left, and yet there is everything left. And that's the beauty, because then you start to feel the interconnectedness of life. Fear disappears because there's nothing to be afraid of anymore. And then you can truly dive into the full essence that you are, which is creative capacity. And we are here to experience ourselves as that full-fledged creative capacity. And so my invitation for people in the work that I do with people is actually to get them to stop, to get them to rest, to teach them how to relax and to sink into these places that we keep trying to run away from. And I found it and still continue to find every moment of it an experience that moves you to really great spiritual heights, because it takes you into the highest places of spirituality in terms of what we're here to attain as souls and as human beings.
Well, I really like that. When you look at a possible sense of self, and people have an identity, I'm a spouse, I'm a parent, I'm a whatever a vocation is. I mean, it takes effort to create these constructs, these platforms of our existence. I mean, you don't become a parent overnight. You don't become a writer, a teacher, or engineer overnight. I mean, it takes a lot of effort to create a place in society, and yet you're saying that if we let go of that, that there's literally a place of rest. I mean, who's the one resting if we're shedding this sense of self?
Isn't that the truth? Who is the one resting? That is the one that we're here to discover, is who's the one that's at rest, that is in relaxation, that is the one that is not only the witness, but the beingness of all of these, that is putting on these different garments. You know, if we are a spouse, that identity has a whole list of beliefs and patterns and behaviors attached to it. Besides that, if we are someone that has a certain job, that identity has a whole list of beliefs and patterns and behaviors attached to it. If we look at every single identity that we carry in our lives, we carry with it all of the baggage of those beliefs, patterns, and behaviors. That is exhausting. It is work. It is heavy. It is the density that weighs us down. And so I have found in my life that one by one, each of my identities keeps getting stripped away. And the more you hold on to it, it is painful, because we want that attachment, and that's what creates the pain. But if we release the identity, not only do we not have to go through the painful process, but we are lighter, because we've also released all of the beliefs, the patterns, the behaviors, the attachments, the control, and the assumptions of what all that means, and our lives get easier. We are the essence of God, the essence of the divine, whatever you want to call that thing, which is the energy of love that surrounds all things. And if we really wanted to live out the true essence of that, then we would not be so attached to these identities. We would understand that we have just pigeonholed that essence into the tiniest speck of sand, when it is actually the entire desert, ocean, mountains, and sphere of Earth itself. And so it's so important for us to be willing to understand that every emotion, particularly the dense ones that come up, they are the degree of attachment that you have to who you believe you are. And that is the smallness that people live in, rather than living out their fullness and their true purpose.
So as we come into this, the twilight zone, the unknowingness to the ego, and we let down our guard, and we let the angst and feelings of our unresolved self come into our conscious space, and then learn how to not have a cow and panic and shove them back down. What's on the other side of that? I mean, if we let go of that stuff and we go in, we allow ourselves to quit resisting it and let it upheave in us, through us, as us, what's on the other side of that?
Well, right now, a lot of spirituality and a lot of individuals, even most conscious ones, don't realize how much of their life and their body is still living in fight or flight. And when we don't allow ourselves to fully feel and squeeze out these different dense energies and these emotions, every choice even our belief in law of attraction or any other place of consciousness still has that underlying foundation of the fight or flight. So when we let ourselves actually take the time to stop and we say that the world is not going to control us, the identity is not going to control us, even this emotional body is not going to control us, that I'm going to master my mind, I'm going to master my emotions, and I'm even going to master not having all of these identities, we begin to flow into that field of energy. We no longer are the identities, and we become the entire field. And as we're resting, as we're stopping in this place, there's a sense of how everything really does work organically. There's a sense of how we are not in time, but actually in timelessness, that we are not bound. It was only our beliefs and our identities or our attachment to our emotions or what we thought that we had to experience. We are actually boundless. And so what we're opening up to then is an opportunity to live life in a completely different way. Rather than being the walking dead, or rather than trying to thrive, or even instead of simply being alive, we move into a space of aliveness. And that is completely different than the prior three, because aliveness is actually moving in the flow of energy as energy completely, without the need to move into fight or flight, because you've become all of it. You've already experienced the depth, but now you can experience the height. And I think that's the key. We can only experience the heights of bliss and the heights of our essence to the degree that we've been willing to go to the depths of the emotions that we carry embedded within our physical structure. And the body does not lie. The body carries the memory of all of our trauma from the time we were born. And if we've not stopped to clear and acknowledge and embrace that trauma fully, and I'm not talking about processing, I'm talking about truly being with it and falling in love with that. That's the key to finding the lover and beloved mystical experience of your full divine self.
So when you let that happen and you process that, but and by connecting with it, there's a perspective that comes into play. I think that part of the history, part of the journey of your past, really provides gifts that, you know, I had this idea of people, you know, all the really powerful people pretty much are raised in train wrecks. Their life is struggle and heartache, and they break open. It's kind of a mechanism of awakening for many people, and it doesn't have to be that way, but it's like you walk out of a severe storm and the wind's blowing and the rain's pounding, and you get to the edge of it and you come out into the clear and you're dripping wet, and you shake yourself off, you straighten yourself up, and you turn around, and through that compassion of your heart, you go back into the storm and offer. And I think you do that through your magazine and radio and books, the vision of what's on the other side of the very thing we resist.
I believe that is part of the spiritual path that we have undertaken. And I do believe that there is a choice. We could just wake up one morning and be our essence. That would require releasing all the identities. That would be an easier, less painful path to doing so. But it takes a very strong, focused individual to say, I'm no longer going to be any identity. I am going to live as God walking. I'm going to live as divine essence from this point forward and be completely in a space where I don't have the encumbrances of identity. We're so used to going through and having that hero's journey concept within us, And because we've been taught to process, or we have these experiences simply because of the history of the earth and trauma that's been inflicted, that we almost have to go through some of these experiences to let them go, as you were saying. What we are opening to right now, though, is, and especially if you look at the world, we are getting this increase in the degrees of violence, or the rhetoric of politics, the deception within different systems and structures. We are seeing outside of us the depths of darkness that we are being asked to embrace within us. And until we truly are willing to go to that place, we can't free our physiology from that. We can't free our minds or our emotional bodies from that. And what tends to take place when we are willing to actually go the distance is we become truly authentic beings. Right now, a lot of authenticity is really from the headspace. It is, okay, I'm going to make sure I'm speaking my voice. I'm going to make sure that I'm living by these thoughts and these principles. I'm going to make sure that, you know, I'm just going to live by my heart and do what I feel like. That's what we look at as authenticity. But if we move through the process of truly releasing identity and releasing the degree of emotion that's been held in the body, so that the body has space to be renewed and be the sacred vessel that we came to inhabit, what you'll discover, what I discovered, is that if there is anything that is against what my true soul and divine nature wants to do, my body just will not do it. It just will not participate. It will not allow me to move. And there's such a trust that starts to be developed with this sacred vessel, because there's this interaction with life and with your vessel and with beingness that completely puts you on your path as essence, so that you fully express your creative gifts. I do believe that gifts come from these hardship experiences, and I think that even that is such a small percentage of the gifts that we truly have. And what the offer is will you trade in the handful of magic beings for the entire golden goose? Because if you will, then you'll go to that place to see the full bounty of your treasure, rather than just holding the small package that you think is yours. Does that make
sure,
sense?
Sure, I like that. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, what I notice is the love is I was going to say sneaky little thing in that it loves to expand. It loves to expand its expression. And for the moment-by-moment choices that you come across, the universe has no need for symbolism or weight or merit or any of that, but there's choices in each moment that are in alignment with you in love or you in fear, in a simple sense. And when you start practicing choosing those things that you love in the moment, and just be present in the moment and not get in your head at all, but just say, what would I love to do right now? There's a, I think you were hinting on that, where you feel that you begin to recognize how it feels, and you just choose not to go there. How do you experience love showing up in your life over time? I mean, incrementally, does love show you new faces, new perspectives of itself as you allow it more of a footing in your being?
My perspective is that it's all love. If we look at even the worst tragedy that's taking place on the planet right now. It's a degree of love. To me, there is not really fear. They're all degrees of love. Even the shadow, it's just another degree of love. What we are here now, especially at this time on the planet, is to say, what is the highest frequency of love that I'm willing to be, so that all these other degrees of love that go into the places of dissonance can be calibrated to this highest frequency? That's what's being asked of each and every one of us. And to do that, it means to bring love to the lower dissonant frequencies. I think the measurement that takes place to show us where we are is the people that show up in our lives as mirrors, the experiences that we have. To me, those are Conversations with the Universe, which was the title of my first book. The world speaks to us on a constant basis, showing us exactly where we are in our own soul evolution. That's the beauty of the interaction and the oneness that we have with everything that is energy just like us. Still trying to create this division of, I don't want this, or I don't like what they're doing, or these people are bad, or we have so much judgment. And judgment is the lowest form of that love, because that is the selfish type of love. And I don't think people realize that what they're looking at is all love. Because when we have these very difficult situations that show up, even something as brutal as murder, that is a form of love to try to bring out our compassion, to try to bring out the darkness within each one of us that would even have the consciousness to see or think that for it to take place in the first place. And so the book was written, Your Journey to Love was written, so that people really go inside and understand there's nothing to do out there. The only place to do it is inside of you, and it begins with your idea of what love is. Do you even know? Do you even know where it came from? Do you even realize that the people that taught you about love were never really loving at the highest frequency in the first place? So how could you possibly know anything else? And knowing that, what type of love can you bring now? And can you bring it to yourself? The darkest, deepest crevices of yourself, the parts of us, each and every one of us, that would also be the racist and the murderer and the abuser and the villain and the one that's committing illegal acts. Because when we can really embrace that side of ourselves and hold it with unconditional love and compassion, we are going to start to see the true essences of God walking, because there will be a neutrality now around those things. And our own angst around those types of things won't support the energy for them to continue to be created on our planet.
Very well said. I very much like all those points that you made. You know, I like in our culture's mythology, there's signposts, if you will, that give us hints about the nature of unconditional love. And two that come to mind are the burning bush in the Bible, I am that I am, and the Bhagavad Gita, as it is. And those are such eloquent sentences where there's no embellishment at all. And then there's divine beings that look at us with such love, and there's just absolutely nothing about who we are that there's any concern about. And I really like how you brought that about with the idea that it's all love. It kind of hints of what Rumi said, where the profane becomes sacred again. It's our souls chose to go into that separation, to go into that disconnect, and wallow, if you will, in the lowest vibration. I like how you reference love as merely different vibrations of love existing. So when we sit here and think of ourselves as a person, as a human being, how do we bring in a practice of love that that helps us raise our own vibration, our own vibrational relationship to that infinite love?
Well, that's why the book was subtitled Discover the Path to Your Soul's True Mate, because we have to understand that there are two sides of us. If we really want wholeness, there is a shadow side. There is a dark side to each and every one of us. And then there's this higher light essence side. And it is the marriage of those two that actually creates wholeness. You are your soul's true mate, the one and only soul's true mate. Any other twin flames or any other person outside of that is simply the reflection of where you are on the path to truly integrating that wholeness. When we recognize that shadow aspect of us, the one that we want to condemn, the one that we thought was weak, the one that we thought was volatile, the one that we thought made all the mistakes in life, the one that we thought screwed up, when we realize that that part of us actually chose to live all of those experiences just to give us the opportunity to discover our other light self, our higher self, we will discover that that was the side of us that really loved us unconditionally. Our shadow self willingly did all of those things so that we could understand our light. And so can we turn and really embrace that shadow as our true soul's true mate, as the lover being devoted to the beloved? And when we are able to do that, then all of a sudden a trinity starts to form. We have this shadow self, which is really the divine feminine. It is really the part of us that is willing to go into the depths of the shaman underworld. And if you look at the divine feminine, that's who she is. She knows about pain. She knows about birth. She is the cauldron of the earth that has seen suffering for eons. So we are here to embrace that side. The light self is the higher self. It is the creative essence. It is the creative source. It is the Father Spirit. So those two coming together is a magnificent sacred marriage that we each have the opportunity to engage in. And the third part of that, which makes up the Trinity, is the divine child. It is the blossoming of our innocence once again, to really see life from a new perspective and then consciously say, I'm willing to walk now my truth based on the understanding that I am the fleetness of love with the ability to now hold everything in its dark and light in that space of neutrality and unconditional love. And when we can do that, then all of a sudden we don't have to be activists. We don't even have to be people that are doing charity. Our mere presence will be enough to hold that neutrality to shift the things in the world that are taking place.
It's when that unconditional love within your own being that has no judgment, that understands that every shadow of darkness was a choice. Like you say, there's no thing that is required as far as an action. It's the field of love itself that the condition comes up against, and there's nothing to meet it. It's all accepting. In that space, the darkness has nothing to push against. And I, you know, like you said, you don't have to protest. You don't have to. In fact, the most powerful thing to do is to look at it through the eyes of love, and in that unconditional acceptance, it's the vehicle of transformation itself as personified by you. I really like where you're going with this, because it's a very timely part of our human story that so many people look at the media, and if they're if they get caught up in the sense that what they see is some sort of definitive reality, they can be afraid. And what you're saying is love's bigger than all of that.
Yes, and our wanting, our desire to go fix something, to go protest something, to try to make a statement, that really is the distraction from us looking at ourselves. It is the degree of distraction that we will go to not have to be with ourselves, and why that triggers us so much, or where in us that actually exists. And I think, you know, if individuals would really see that we live in an organic universe, something that is naturally unfolding. And right now what is taking place with everything that's happening, from Clinton and Trump to ISIS to the issues with shootings and Caucasian and African American and all of the things that we are facing right now, what is actually taking place is a balancing. It is a balancing so that things rise to the surface and clear. And the best thing to do in chaos is actually nothing. Because when we interfere with chaos, we create more chaos. That is a concept that is hard for the mind to comprehend, but it is a truth that the heart knows.
Absolutely. It's that... that inner knowingness of what, you know, it's the loving eyes. It's, you know, nobody's ever broken a karmic law. There's never been a thought that's out of bounds of what our human potential is. And I see so much upheaval of what we've really suppressed in our culture that, the shadow of our collective is being played out on the media and social media, that it, when you engage it, you know, it's like what Einstein said, if you approach a problem with the same thinking that created it, you're not going to get anywhere with it. And it's that, that high vibration of unconditional love that really allows you to transform the condition. So when you look at love, then, as you embrace the shadow, as you embrace the feminine, the foundry of all that is, and you release any posturing or bias to it, and you become mentally and emotionally cleansed of any reaction to it. How do you see the model of a divine human being playing out on a planet, not necessarily on this planet, but just what's the divine idea of a human experience from the perspective of divine love?
Before I go into that answer, I want people to really understand, to change our mind, to change our consciousness, takes a minimum of 2 to 3 years to change the whole workup of your mind and how you see things. Your perspective takes diligent, persistent work of 2 to 3 years to change that whole neural net. The second thing is your physiology. To completely not react from the impulses of the physiology, which means something happens and you immediately want to go do something. If you watch the body is going to want to follow what it's always been programmed to do. It's been, in a sense, body washed into believing what it has to do in that fight or flight response. That is why there is this necessity to stop, so that someone can actually realize, wow, look at where my body's going right now. Look at where the stomach knots up. Look at what happens with my throat. Look at how the stress starts to impact my body, and I really feel like I have to get busy. So it does take that devotional commitment to something greater than the identity or the human self, to be with our humanity, which is completely different than who we are, and is completely different than what we think of as the whole humanity collective. We have to first be able to be with our humanity. When we can finally be with our own humanity, that is the path to the new human. The new human has mastered the mental body. They have mastered the emotional body where they don't have to react and respond. They have also mastered the ability to know that what has to be changed can be done in a certain way purely by holding the consciousness of it. And they are the spiritual rebel. And that is a very sacred term because the spiritual rebel knows there's nothing to fix, save, or heal on the outside, that our true worth and true change that we can create in the world comes from our ability to dive into our creative essence. Because when we dive into our creativity fully and completely, then the inspiration bubbles up anything that needs to create a change. It is the pure divine wonder of the child, the divine child that emerges from within us. And all of a sudden, the world becomes a playground instead of a battlefield. And that's the place that the new human is walking towards. And so when we can truly live life as a playground with the innocence, wonder, and divine confidence of the divine child, we will have become the new human.
Very well said. I like that. It's I like the wonderment of a child aspect of that. And
I
so when
about
you
that in my second book, Your Journey to Enlightenment, it is all about releasing the boundaries and the bindings that we have and starting to even see the world from that perspective. But it is the embodiment of that perspective that's going to create the new world.
Right. So I really like that that idea of the wonderment of a child, where you switch from the battlefield to the play field, if you will, of that inner child, of that divine child within us. That really changes the whole direction of it, in the sense that you were talking about that inspiration that's coming out from within, showing the opportunity of the moment. Well, how does that, that's something you could embody now today as an example. Not only for yourself, embodying your truth, embodying that the balance and the divinity of who you are, but also what you show others by just being authentically you. Don't you think?
Yes. Yes, and I can tell you what it looks like. Right now, we have a lot of people even unconscious to the fact that most of our actions are with an agenda, are with a vision out there in the future that we want to attain, or a goal, or a list of things that we're trying to achieve. Most people set their day based on what they believe we are supposed to create to have our lives, or to have our freedom, or to have our retirement. To truly live from that place of the divine child, you have to live from the creative space of just wanting to experience yourself. And so the work that I do, whether it's a posting on Facebook, whether it's writing a book, whether it is being on a radio show just like this, I'm not doing any of it with an agenda. I'm not here to try to convince anybody of anything. I'm not here to change the world. I'm not here to change consciousness. I'm not here to change someone from a human into a divine being. I am here to experience myself. I'm here to experience the level of creativity, the level of voice, the level of expression that can come through me. But in doing that, it is going to ripple out and affect change anyway. Because based on where people are, they're either going to be inspired, or they're going to be triggered, or they're going to see an example, and they're going to embody that example in their own life. But what we are really here to do is to completely inspire ourselves and to create with no agenda and to create whatever our hearts desire simply because it fills us up. And when we do that, what we need shows up. We don't have to go out and work to make an income. What we need just shows up and arrives for us. When we're truly living authentically as created beings on this planet, then we fall into that space of source and supply that you can't deny. And that goes beyond the law of attraction. That's actually being in the oneness of all that is energy. And that's the thing that I think people are going to awaken to and be mesmerized by, because it then becomes a magical place. And children live in the land of Wonderland. They live in magic. They live in the present. They live in the moment. They're not planning agendas. They're not trying to figure out things. They're not designing vision boards. They're not writing million-dollar checks. But children get what they want, always. It manifests for them. So we have the perfect example sitting right in front of us all of the time. They're showing us how to do it. We just have become too adult and way too serious. And we have thought that we're the ones teaching them. We need to flip the equation, because it is the children that are here to teach us.
Right. I like that. Well, let's take a look at your platform. Can you give us a chronological history of your books and what you've written?
Yes. My first book was Conversations with the Universe, and it's a book that helps people to trust life, because it talks about the signs and symbols and synchronicities that show up all around you to tell you who you are. My second book is Your Journey to Enlightenment, and it is about releasing the constructs and the conformity so that you can step into the divine wonder and become the divine child. And my third book is Your Journey to Love, and that is truly about discovering yourself as your true soulmate, integrating your shadow and your light, and creating that mystical marriage. And the work that I do now with individuals has two sides. It is, number one, I host retreats to help people learn how to stop, how to rest, how to truly place their bodies in a space of relaxation, which is very different than rest. And then I have an online program that takes them deeply into the space of being the divine, of truly embodying the devotional experience on a daily basis in their lives.
So do you do one-on-one work, or is it all through groups?
I do one-on-one work as well as small groups. I particularly like to work more personally with small groups or individually. And for individuals that are wanting information to start off with, I have a number of free things that I offer as well, such as 1111 Magazine. It's a full curriculum, and 1111 Talk Radio, in addition to programs like 30 Days of Awakening. So there are different things that people can participate in and find where they need to go. But my job on the planet, if you could say I have a job, is to truly help people slow down and stop and learn to not be in that fight or flight, to learn to truly trust life so that they start to live life in a different way.
Well, this is a great time for details. So do you do one-on-one through Skype or phone calls? Or?
I do. I mentor people through phone, through Skype, or one-on-one in person. They can come for retreats and do custom weekends where they get assistance in that way. I also have online programs that support people that want to do their own work on their own time. And all of that information is at my website, which is iamsimran.com. That's iamsimran.com.
Well, you know, I have to tell you, listening to you in this particular episode, we've had several before, I thoroughly delight in your material. It has such an eloquence to it. The truth tends to be an elegant expression, and anything outside of that is a construct or a force of it. And I'm very much delighted by your language, your material, and the heart space that you convey it through. It's quite a delight having you on the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Les. Thank you for the space. And everything that I've ever written or when I speak, it comes from pure experience. And so I've walked every step that I've ever talked about, and I understand that journey. I understand how we're each here to be seen, heard, and acknowledged.
Well, how long has this journey, I mean, you'd mentioned earlier in the show that you knew from a very early age. Have you been immersed in this for most of your lifetime, or did you have a career and then have your life turn around, or how'd that work out?
Internally, I have had this communion with God from the time I was young. At times, it was a fight with God. At other times, it was the love affair with God. And that has been a back and forth, probably started when I was around 5 years old. I'd say the true beginning of my spiritual walk in trying to understand how the world works and discover things, and where I started to become acquainted with how the language of the signs and symbols worked, started about 16 years ago. And that's when I truly delved very, very deeply, as we all do, what you call a seeker. Because I think that's part of the path. We want to satisfy the mind. And so there was a lot of seeking for a while. And then the seeking I decided to put aside, and instead I decided to start experiencing. And that is the pathway from the head to the heart that we're each here to go to. And then there's this next step that goes from the heart deeply into the internal universe. And that is a walk through the fire. It is a walk where you truly say, I am committed to doing my work. I'm committed to my soul and to the experience of discovering who I am not, so that I can understand that I'm more than my body. I'm more than my identity. I'm more than this name. I'm more than anything that anyone else has told me that I am. And if I'm willing to go there, it means I'm willing to discover all that is unknown about myself. And that has been my journey.
Well, how does it feel as an experience to be so completely embodied or personified by such a clear vision? How do you... I mean, for a lot of people struggle in their life. A lot of people have a list of things that they would rather change. Share with us just how you feel fulfilling this aspect of yourself.
I'd say freedom is probably the best word to describe it. I have such a sense of freedom because there were stages in my life where it was all about ambition. It was about all that I could accomplish or who I wanted to be, which is a place that a lot of people can find themselves, especially in their early 20s, 30s, even 40s. Then there came this place of what I want to attain, the vision that I'm here to create, the purpose of who I'm supposed to be. And that's where a lot of people get stuck and get lost, because they think they have to have this one purpose that they're supposed to live out, and either they know it or they're continuously searching for it. And all of that is attached to identity. And so as these identities kind of got stripped away, it left a space of just utter freedom where there's no need to accomplish anything. There's no need to attain any height. There's no want for anything. There really is a desire for complete presence in whatever way and at whatever moment I am showing up. But to live from that place of pure creation rather than anything else, and to live in the free space, to not be ruled by the head, and to not even be commanded by the passion of the heart, because that too is an addiction, but to live in the free space of creativity and creation, it is something that is truly hard to describe in words, and the word freedom is probably the closest thing that I could share with people that might resonate, because I think that's what we're all looking for. We're looking for freedom and peace. And my life is filled with freedom and peace. It doesn't mean that my life does not have has not had obstacles and challenge, or that if someone were to walk into my home would say, well, wait a minute, but you still have these experiences that are taking place, or you're still walking through this type of challenge. It's that those things no longer control any part of me. And that's where true freedom and peace lay.
Right. Very well said. Very well said. I love the authenticity that you share with us. I just want to thank you for being on the show. It's been such a delight. I'm so grateful to be a vehicle to share this authenticity that you embody so well with our audience. Thank you so much for being on our show tonight.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, Les. And the main thing I want people to know is that we are all human, in order to touch our humanity, and that we are all going to experience every kind of challenge because we live in the land of opposites. And so to have guides such as yourself to support people to move through this amazing land of opposites is a blessing and a gift. And I appreciate you allowing me to have a place to express my creative voice.
Well, thank you. We've been talking with Simran Singh, and the topic tonight has been your journey to love. You know, Simran so embodies that that wholeness of self. I like that phrase. I think it fits well in this in that sense that there's no posture or stature that has been fabricated and then perpetuated as a sense of self. She has such a vividness and a lucidness that I think really is a excellent reflection of her material. You know, we're all here as humans, and yet there's so much to discover about who we are. I love bringing episodes to our listeners so we can get that glimpse into that bigger idea, that bigger picture of what the truth looks like, because only the truth can sustain itself over time. Anything else is a construct, a chapter, a season, an episode, if you will, within the truth. And so much of society is looking for some semblance of truth they can hang their hat on. And it's not until you come to terms with what's inside of you and really let go of any posturing within your own being that you can really come to a point of having a glimpse of what the truth is, because, you know, the truth has no requirements of its own. It just is. And it existed before language or religion. And as such, we can't describe it in words without serious compromise. But we can experience it. We can know it through our own experience. You know, it's been my pleasure giving you an opportunity like this. I'm so glad you chose to join us and grow who you are. Life's a wonderful thing when you can show up for it, and I so appreciate that you've done just that tonight. I'm your host, Les Jensen, and until next time, thanks for listening.
This has been a New Human Living Radio broadcast to bring your soul's inspiration into effect and live your life wide open. Check out our host, Les Jensen's latest book, Citizen King, The New Age of Power, at newhumanliving.com. Thanks for listening.